Well, the beautiful and talented Tia Carrera is back in studio, getting to all sorts of nonsense with her. She sings a beautiful song along with her guitarist, Evan Z. And we'll do all that right after this.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Tia Carrera. Plus, we'll do some news stories with Chris Loxamana. And now, wishing all the dyslexic listening a happy 3223. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. A choice pick. Any mandate you get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. Always good to see our friend Tia Carrera in studio.
Nice to be here.
Max Pat is here, too.
Hello.
We got Tia's beautiful single. She's going to play live for us coming up in, soon enough. We'll get into that. The video is pretty wonderful, too, which you sent me, but I don't know where people can find
it. Thank you. It's on YouTube. I sent Jen the link, so maybe she can embed it somewhere.
We'll put it on the website.
In the situation.
Yeah it's beautifully shot.
Thanks. Yeah, I just went to Hawaii. It was my day off from organizing my family reunion. Mm. It was like, I went to Hawaii to organize a family reunion and shoot a music video.
Family reunions.
As I do.
My family's never had a family reunion. I'm trying to think of families that do have family reunions.
We have one.
But you tell me which family this is, because I just had a thought, which is really good families have family reunions, and then some not-so-good families seem to have family reunions as well. It's the in-between families that don't seem to have the reunion. Maybe it's a rich man, poor man thing. The family
I think it's the
reunion.
More kids, less kids thing. My grandma's family had 11 kids, so mm-hmm. It's just sheer numbers. You know, there's going to be more good people than bad people, I guess, that get together and have a party.
And you're charged with putting it together?
I've done it a couple of times, once in Hawaii and once in Vegas. So,
And what kind
very
of
organized.
What kind of attendance are we talking about here?
About like 120 people.
Really?
That was a Vegas one. This one was, I guess like 80 people, something like that, I think. 70 people.
Ambitious.
Yeah, and I brought my my Grammy-winning cohorts, Uncle George Kahumoku Jr., up on the back porch to sing for my aunt. She was in heaven. It was amazing.
On another subject, I was watching TV last night, maybe CBS, and I saw a commercial for True Lies, the series.
Yeah, maybe they can bring me back with half my face scarred or something.
They're bringing it back. It's not that often that they turn a feature that's 25 years old into a series, but they're
running
did.
Out of new ideas.
Yeah. And so is your character anywhere represented in that, or is it just the Schwarzenegger, Jamie Lee Curtis? Because that's who they were focusing on, but I didn't know how deep the plots went.
Well, I know that McGee was trying to, you know, do it as a series maybe a decade ago, mm-hmm. and I don't know what happened. It didn't happen. I went in for that one. And then this one, I just came out of nowhere because I met Gabriel Luna, and he's like, oh, we're doing a True Lies. I was like, what? I hadn't heard anything about it. So maybe if we keep talking about it, maybe they could bring Juno Skinner as like an Easter egg with a scarred face somewhere.
Did you get any notices for that, like any SAG awards or nominations or anything? I know it's an action film, and they always discount that, but you were excellent in that.
Thank you. Thank you. My favorite scene got left on the cutting room floor, unfortunately. It was a big seduction scene in the tomb with Arnold. Mm. So it was a whole long monologue. Talking about the petroglyphs on the wall, saying, look at these people. They lived thousands of years ago. I just hope that they lived and danced and breathed and did what they wanted to, because getting what you want is the only important thing, isn't it? And like, that's my whole thing leading up to him.
That would have worked, too.
Yeah. So it was great. It was a great scene. But it fell into a slow part of the film. So Jim Cameron wrote me like a beautiful letter and said, I'm so sorry. This is my favorite scene in the movie, or one of my favorite scenes. But I had to cut it out because of where it's set in the story.
Mm.
That's pretty unheard of, a director writing a big letter because he edited out your scene.
Such a nice guy. Yeah, I just saw him recently at one of these Oscar events. And it was, you know, it's nice. You know, that's the thing. It's like when you're nice to people on your way up and everything in between, you know, keep the energy clean. You see each other 20, 30 years later, and it's a good feeling as opposed to like, oh no, there's that weird Tia person.
Yeah, there's it's a two-way street. Keep it good. You're happy to see that person.
Be nice.
Yeah, I agree. It seems easy. I mean, I'm not that nice, but I'm always
but you're trying. I mean, you're
no,
nice to me.
I don't even try. I put fairness ahead of niceness.
Okay.
Because fairness is a sort of boots on the ground.
Grounded niceness. You deserve the niceness I'm dishing out.
Fairness is has a real world application. Niceness is sort of cotton candy. It's sort of empty calories. I know plenty of people who are super nice and don't do jack shit for other people.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd rather be dealing with a fair person that was a little less nice than a nice person that was less fair.
Or a little of both.
Little of both.
In a perfect world.
Agreed.
Yeah, get a balance.
So you, as I was talking to Chris on the ride in, he was like, you did Celebrity Apprentice with Tia. And then I said, yeah. And then he said, oh, she got out on the fifth task. And then I said, didn't I get out on the fourth task? And he said, yep. And then he said, she did Dancing with the Stars and she went out on the fifth dance. And I said, didn't I go out on the fourth dance? So yeah. I essentially
feel a curse.
I beat you. I edged you out in each one of these things. If we were playing golf, I'd have a lower score. But
that's interesting. I did not make that connection.
Yeah, it was four. Then it was always me, then you. Now, we didn't do Dancing with Stars at the same time, right?
Yeah, she was in the second season, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was at the very beginning of that whole thing. Crazy.
So what is your take on those kinds of mass singers and celebrity this and celebrity that? Because I think some people look down their nose at it. I just look at it as sort of a challenge, something that scares you, something that couldn't be recreated.
Yeah, do one thing every day that scares you, that whole adage, like something that challenges. The dance thing is a great skill, and I wish I'd kept up with that Argentinian tango because that's a hot dance.
Is that the one you did in True Lies?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's the same song, different, completely different choreography, which is funny, so it's a little confusing for my brain. But yeah, it's that's the thing. At the end of it, you're proud of the four dances that you danced, right? You're like, wow, I did that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
you're not happy about anything. Are you?
Look, doing stuff you're good at is pretty easy and it's attractive. You want to do it. Doing stuff you're not good at and scares you a little bit is where the growth comes in.
Mm-hmm. Synapse is firing in a different way, too. Your body's being called upon in a different way. So it's good for us as we age.
Yeah, and I think it's good to be a little bit of a Renaissance man or a Renaissance woman to be able to do a lot of different things, some physical, some mental or emotional. And I think there's a lot of growth there. Like, I really do hearken back on thinking about, you know, sort of being out on the dance floor when it goes dark, and then they go, and now dancing the cha-cha.
Dancing the cha-cha. And you're like, Adam Carolla.
And you're like, what is going on? Here's the thing that I think people miss out on in the celebrity version of Dancing with the Stars or the Masked Singer or Toyota Celebrity Grand Prix or even an all-star celebrity softball game at Dodger Stadium. You know, all kind of stuff I've done. I played in 10,000 softball games, but it's at the park and there's nobody around, you know, and I've done some driving schools and stuff like that, but it's in the high desert and there's nobody around. Karaoke, sung in your living room, drunk, three people around, you know. But doing things on a scale where there
are millions of eyeballs,
where the stadium is full and you're playing that softball game. I mean, there is a whole different vibe to. I played in one with Jimmy, I don't know, Mets Shea Stadium, or I don't even know where the fuck I was, but I remember. I think it was either Wade Boggs or Jim McMahon got up. It's been Wrigley or something, Chicago, where the White Sox play. Anyway, I was playing in left field. It was at night. And he hit this just towering sort of fly ball that wasn't that deep, but it was super high into the night air. And it was drifting toward the foul line. And I was in left field, and I was like drifting toward the bleachers. And everybody in the bleachers was yelling, don't drop it, don't drop it, don't drop it.
You know,
and it was just up there forever. And I was just like drifting. And Jim McMahon got all of this ball. And if the angle had been a tenth off, it'd just go over the fence.
Right.
But instead, it just rocketed into the night. And I was just like drifting. And I could hear this entire whole bleachers was like screaming at me. And I caught it.
You caught it.
And then later on, I robbed Brian McKnight of a home run. That was a game.
Wait a minute.
If
you're
Gio's listening.
Moment, you it went into the night air, and you leaned back, and you stuck your glove out, and it just landed perfectly, and then you caught it. He just breezes past
that
moment.
It was a fairly routine. It was a routine catch. Later on, robbing Brian McKnight really was. That was robbed over the fence. But if I was playing at the park, I would have done the move that I would try once in a while. I was around the back catch. I was pretty good at whipping around the back. It was in foul territory, whatever. Not with all those people screaming. It's two hands and both feet out, moving like I'm pushing a walker in front of me. Like it added a dimension that you'll never experience.
Yeah.
And I would say Dancing with the Stars, Toyota Celebrity Grand Prix, you know, Masked Singer, even Apprentice or whatever. It just
singing
adds
the national anthem for the Dodgers, Filipino Night.
Oh, you.
Yeah. I love singing the national anthem. It's like I used to do it in senior year in high school, so it's my jam. But it is quite something because there's a delay in the stadium.
Yeah.
So it makes it kind of weird.
Yes. And it adds a dimension that is, you know, it's basically like saying
tons of pressure.
Yeah, it's like saying that trash can's 8 feet away. You got this ball of foil from your burrito wrapper. If you get it in the trash can, I'll give you $1 or I'll give you $100,000. Like, it's the same action. It just got ratcheted way
different energy
up. And then the question is, does your hand start shaking when you hold it up to throw the burrito foil into the thing? Because that will fuck you up. Some people do better in that environment, very few.
I do well under pressure. Like,
that's good.
In the event of a natural emergency, some sort of natural disaster, that's my jam. I'm like,
oh, good.
I don't know. It just focuses all my energy that's going everywhere until it's really needed to be harnessed. So it's good for me, the pressure cooker.
So you do the national anthem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you did it in high school.
I'm doing it this Sunday, actually.
Where at?
For the inauguration of Rob Bonta, our Attorney General in California.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you get on to that?
Just being friends with him and helping with some of his campaigning and stuff like that.
That's
another
a hard song to
fellow
sing.
Filipino.
You got it by heart. You don't have to look down.
I don't. How can you? Do you not know the national anthem of our great country?
I think I know it.
Of course you do. You've heard it a gazillion times.
But if you just put me in front of a hockey stadium and told me to belt it out, I would definitely screw that pooch.
Some lyrics will be missed.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I think everybody knows it. I mean, you think you don't know it and you open your mouth and you're like, oh, of course, I know all the lyrics.
I was told to do the Pledge of Allegiance in front of like the military ambassadors of the world or something. I had to go over that in my head pretty quick. I was told game time. Like, I was still walking up on stage. Oh, hey, by the way, one of the things you got to do is you got to lead everyone in the national anthem. And I was like, oh, shit. Pledge of Allegiance. Sorry.
Was that when you're holding the wine glass? Because you can't do that.
Evidently, you can. You know.
You did the Pledge of Allegiance with a wine glass in your hand?
He was told on the way up.
It was only half full.
Or half empty.
He took a sip mid.
That was a... that's a good example of like good and bad, and then what good can come from bad, and so on and so forth. That story. We have a grainy shot of me up on
doing
stage.
Doing the Pledge of Allegiance with said glass of wine in your hand.
Walked up to the mic.
Well, people are listening have heard the story before, but it's been a little while. I was asked to MC this event at the Ronald Reagan Museum. You can see the color guard there with the flag and the notables.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people decked out in all the military garb and all that stuff. And because no one will just put something in an email, I got there early, was sort of hobnobbing, had a glass of wine, as I'm apt to do. And I was told, as I was sort of making my way to stage, you have to do the Pledge of Allegiance.
They're not supposed to spring stuff like exactly. that on you.
Agreed.
I'd be like, no, get one of the generals to do it.
But you're going to tell these people no?
No.
Yes, you say no.
Yes, no. So, well, he said, you need to lead everyone in this. So it's like, if I'm not going to lead them, then we're not going to do it. But that's like, this is how we start every one of these things. But again, I was aware of this weeks in advance. Could have been put in an email, you know?
Sure.
So now I'm up in my head, you know, to the rock and which it stands, one nation, indivisible.
Under God. Indivisible.
God, indivisible,
right.
Indivisible under God.
Now I'm walking my way on stage. I got a wine glass in my hand.
Oh, no.
Now I get up on stage. I see I have a wine glass in my hand. And there's no table. There's nothing to do with this wine glass.
You can't put it on the floor.
Give it to one of the color guards there.
There's like a
flag in one hand and wine in the other.
There's a drum kit behind me, but what am I supposed to do? Set it on a snare? The bass drum is the best you're going to do,
right.
But it'll roll off.
Those toms are tilted.
So now I'm like, I'm thinking about maybe setting it on the ground.
Yeah,
but
that probably would have been the best choice.
But I know military code. The flag touches the ground. You got to burn it. And the wine glass touches the ground. I thought if I put the wine glass down on the stage, I'd probably kick it over at some point. So I just kept it in my hand.
Oh, my God. Hit it behind your back.
That would have probably been the best move.
And delivered. And then the...
Got through it.
Spoke a couple of words. And then the first... general I brought up, like the 5-star general guy I brought up, and I just had a list of then you bring this guy up, you know. And the first guy I brought up was the guy in charge of military sobriety. He ran the military's, you know, safe and clean, you know, sobriety.
Did he mention your glass of wine?
Oh, he brought that up.
It was mentioned.
I introduced him. I started to walk off stage. He walked behind me. He basically grabbed the mic. He said, I have no idea who this character is, but you do not face the flag of the United States holding alcohol.
This
is not funny. I know he thinks he's a comedian. This is not what you do. This is not welcome here. Many of our veterans struggle with sobriety, and the message this guy's, and he's laid into me.
Oh, ow.
Now, this is the first guy of the night. I had 11 more guys to get through before Kevin Costner's band played.
Oh, geez. Yeah,
Adam's the host, so he's going in between each speaker.
So now...
They all start railing on you.
I'm sitting there. Just the first guy lays into me. I'm just sitting at a table waiting for him to... be done, and then I have to walk up on stage, pass by him,
shake his hand,
and do a mover, like put your hands together for general sobriety, you know. So I'm like, oh God. So I bring everybody up. It's been a long night. I have the worst part is people are coming up to me going, don't listen to him. And I'm going, don't say anything. Just go walk, keep walking away. Like he's sitting right there staring at me.
He's
the whole
watching
time.
Me.
He's sitting a table away, just daggers, you know, at me the whole time.
Eagle-eyed, as it were.
So I bring the last guy up. I go, look, the last thing you got to do is you got to bring Kevin Costner's band up there. I go, okay. But I'm bringing his band up, and I'm getting the fuck out of here. I'm not hanging around for after that guy, that general staring at me the whole time. He's going to sit and watch Costner's band. I'm sneaking out the back door. It's free. It's Sunday night. We're in Simi Valley. I got an hour and 20-minute drive. I'm out.
I don't want to face his firing squad.
Then they're like, you cannot leave after Kevin Costner's band. It's in the next room, Chris. Someone... should run and go get it. We are going to present you with a commemorative paddle from a Zodiac boat that SEAL Team 6 uses. And I'm
beautiful.
Like, just send the paddle over to the shop. I'll put it up on the wall. You know, they're like,
I feel like, is the general going to use it on me? Is that?
Yeah, I'm going to get paddled by this.
These are honors bestowed on Adam, and he's like, I got to get out of here.
We're giving the paddle to Costner.
Oh my gosh.
We're giving the paddle. Yeah, lest anyone thinks I'm making any of this
amazing.
Up. It says,
you have to show it to the camera.
From SEAL NSW Family Foundation, Adam Carolla, in appreciation of your outstanding support of the Naval Special Warfare community.
Look,
and it's
at
got
this.
All the badges on it. And it's ingrained. It's beautiful.
Navy
it's beautiful.
Seal
but
Navy SEALs, dude.
I wanted nothing to do with it. So
you just didn't want them to whip you with it. That's all.
I was just like, just send it to my house.
Oh, my God.
And they're like, no, we're doing a whole formal presentation. With Costner's going to play.
The guy who made it was probably there, excited to see it bestowed.
Costner's going to play like a 45-minute set. And then when he's done, you know, and so I was like, oh, boy. So then I hang out.
Uh-oh.
And then me and Costner get our paddles. I don't know where his paddle is today. If we got together, we could actually move a Zodiac boat.
Yeah.
Just the one paddle. We're going in a circle.
Right.
So I do it and all that kind of stuff. And then we're up on stage. And, like, Costner, who I don't know at all, never really met, he's like, hey, I like the way you handled yourself out there. And I said, oh, really? He said, I was up in the wings. Like, I was watching when that general tore your new asshole. And I saw what you did, how you kind of handled it afterward. And he goes, I like that.
So
like, I appreciate that. And I was like, okay. And then he's like, we should get together and hang out a little bit. You know, come by the ranch in Santa Barbara. And I was like, oh, okay. And the next thing you know, I'm
best buddy
hanging out at Costner's place at his ranch. So
it all paid off.
Yeah, something bad happened. And then something good
came
of it.
The yin and the yang. Yeah.
That was the yin and the
terrifying,
yang.
Terrifying, though.
Nights. Yeah,
I'd
right?
I'd be scared.
So you're getting up. You did Dodger Stadium.
Yep. I'm doing the inauguration on Sunday downtown with the mayor.
And you started this
everybody.
In high school?
Yeah. It was the honor bestowed upon a certain singer in the senior year. So I started entering talent contests when I was in junior high. And by the time it was senior year, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that. Flag raising. Nice. So somebody would get the honor of like raising the flag, and then somebody got to sing the national anthem a cappella on the microphone through the school.
How much you?
That's me.
How much of your own spin do you put on it? Because every time I hear national
spin.
Anthem, there's somebody.
No
you know,
spin.
All the runs.
I just sing it straight. It's such a great song. Just
it's rangy.
Yeah. I don't need to put anything on it.
We were talking about this yesterday. Did your high school have best physique, best body, class flirt, class clown?
Well, it was all girls.
Oh, it was all girls.
So it was like most likely to succeed, most likely to marry a doctor. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Was it a Catholic school?
No, it was a Catholic school.
Yeah.
Just, you know, our Haas elections were kind of minimal because it was like, you know, not hottest guy and hottest girl or anything like that.
But, you got discovered like just like by shopping or something. You were shopping.
In the grocery store in Waikiki. Yeah, so. But it was the producer's mother and father that approached me and said, darling, you're gorgeous. You should be in my son's movie. And I got this movie and no experience, but I just made pretend.
How old were you?
17. I hadn't graduated from high school yet.
Is that something people do today even still? Like, just
I think Charlize Theron was discovered by a manager because she was like losing her shit in the bank because they wouldn't cash her check or something. She couldn't access as much. Remember that story?
I heard that story.
And so this manager said, oh, you'd be, you know, are you an actress? And so he became her manager.
They used to have a place called Schwab's.
And yeah, the Lana Turner Schwab story.
The story was you go down to this, I don't know, deli, diner,
drugstore.
Yeah.
With like, a counter, like
and
soda jerk.
And if you're a beautiful young girl who's come to Hollywood, you just come sit at that counter, and then you get discovered there. Because, I don't know, acting wasn't what it was now back then. It was just, most of it was you had to have the aesthetic, and then if you could kind of hit your mark, you know, good enough. Like, I don't even know what percentage of those actresses were great actresses, or they just looked like they look, but you would go to
Schwab's. Well, they put them in school, though. They
and
put
you would
them
get
in the
discovered.
Studio system back then.
Oh.
So they put you into acting classes, singing classes, dance classes, teach you how to walk
with a book on your head.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I learned that at the Sears Charm School in Hawaii.
Did you?
Yep. Right next to the tire section.
Really?
True story.
I want to talk about this.
You can't make this
up. I could walk with a hardbound cover. I think I could do it with a book on my head if I could open the book and kind of wear it like a roof.
It wedges
onto my Brillo head. I think I could do that, but you couldn't do it. You went to the Sears
Charm School. Charm School and Sears back behind the tire department in Ala Moana. And that's where I learned how to walk and to talk like a regular lady. Look at this.
What
you have
year
the best,
was that?
You have the best guys on your research.
The Sears Charm School.
See?
For girls 12 through 19.
Did not make it up.
A 5-week course which includes makeup, hair care, figure control.
Figure control. Is that calorie deficit kind of?
Oh, boy. Fashion modeling, wardrobe, and walking. Wow.
It's a true
beauty
thing.
Secrets.
I learned how to, you know, I don't know, cross my legs properly, which fork and knife and spoon to use, and, you know.
So it was essentially finishing school.
Yeah.
Next to the tire department. So I don't know how finished I was when I was done with it.
Were you hearing those impact guns go off all day?
Yeah, rivets.
God damn.
Yeah.
Sears was like one stop shop.
It was a great store.
Oh, it was the same Sears.
Yeah, you needed a bra or go-kart or
tires
or jeans or tires.
Washer,
or
dryer.
Batteries. Yeah, it was just, you would just go to Sears. Mm-hmm. That was it. And even finishing school.
Mm-hmm.
God. And did you sign up for that or did someone go, you need to sign up for finishing school?
I think it was my grandma. My grandma took me to my first singing lesson. And then she took me to charm school because she thought it was important that I learn these things. So she would go to the window and go pay her Sears bill, and I'd go to charm school. She'd go shopping.
God.
Simple joys in life.
Simple time back then.
Yeah. I miss those
days.
That's
why she has a family reunion.
Yeah.
You had that finishing school under your belt. I was on that subject of women and different times and all that. Somebody sent me, I think they tweeted me, a clip of Chris Collinsworth, ex-NFL great and commentator, of course, now. And it was from 84, during Monday Night Football.
Halftime.
Yeah, I mean halftime of Monday Night Football. Right. And there's this bit of him talking about being a bachelor and meeting the ladies. And, you know, Collinsworth, pretty buttoned up, straight down the middle guy. You don't hear a lot of, you know, he's not Charles Barkley. You don't get a lot of controversial stuff out of Chris Collinsworth. But tell me how insane this thing sounds from 1984.
I think being a bachelor and playing football have a lot of similarities between them. You go out and there's not anything in the world any more competitive than going out and trying to find the girl.
Chris Collinsworth is a wide receiver with all the right moves on and off the field. Like the crafty player he is, you never know when to take him seriously. So, Chris, why do you think those girls really like you?
I think probably because of the money, you know, and I'm not going to deny it. I walk around with $100 bills hanging out of my pockets usually and try and give it my best shot, because before I ever made any money, it was pretty much big nothingsville.
At least he knows.
I like girls too bright because you can trick them a little bit.
Not too bright.
Play that. Go back.
Play back. We skimmed over there. They're not that bright.
Wait, what?
Oh, listen to this, what he says about what girls he likes.
Because before I ever made any money, it was pretty much big nothingsville. I like girls that aren't too bright because you can trick them. The punk rockers all love me. Those are my big girls, and high school girls love me. 14 to 18, I'm a big star with them. As soon as they mature, after about 18 years old, they start figuring out that, wait a minute, I know there's better than that out there, you know, but most people don't take me very seriously at all, you know, and I can't understand why. I guess that the fact, if I had any one thing that I'd like people to know, is that I have some intelligence about me. There's a little bit of a method to my madness. You know, but I imagine that should I ever get married, it'll probably be to that all-American looking girl or the girl next door.
It's hard to believe that's the same guy commentating on games.
14 to 18 is a sweet spot.
That's the illegal spot.
Yeah.
Come on, Chris.
And that he said it on TV. Oh, my goodness gracious.
But
he's lucky he came up in the 80s. That's all I can say.
So we do a thing where we go, why would he say that on TV? But the answer is it was okay to say that on TV. It wasn't him saying it on TV. We had a society that was geared that way. We were, society was okay with it.
Right.
Nobody said anything at the time, and he didn't walk out of that interview and go, holy shit, what did I say? That was society.
What channel was that on, though?
Well, that was Monday Night Football. That
was
wasn't
Monday
live.
That was Monday Night Football?
Yeah, that was a pre-produced package. So a lot of people have already seen it.
And they could have gotten the scissors to cut it out, but they didn't.
And it was okay to play for all the families across America.
How old was he in this interview?
25.
Early 20s. So I actually have a quote.
Oh, my God.
I have a quote from
him. That's prime time ABC Monday Night Football biggest ratings of the week is Monday Night Football. And yes, you're right. They shot it. They edited the shit out of it. And that's what they came up with. Yes.
Who knows what hit the cutting room floor?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. Yeah, it's a different time. Yeah. 1984. That's when I moved to L.A.
Yeah.
That's the world I came into as a young, impressionable girl, not knowing anything from Catholic school.
That's
when you arrived here, huh?
That's when I arrived here, right in the heart of that.
You had to deal with that shit.
Yeah.
Thank God you're 6 months too old for Chris Collinsworth. You were 18 and a half at the time.
Jeez.
Yeah.
No, it was 17.
Oh, you could have fallen prey to him.
I could have gotten right under the wire. I missed an opportunity.
If you landed in Cincinnati, you probably would have been under a spell because you played for the Bengals.
Would hanging $100 bills out of a pocket, would that work on you back then?
It happened often, and it worked all the time.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
I didn't mean for you. I just meant like in general.
What do you mean? I've always been of the mind that I saw what happened. Like, I always think that everybody's got to paddle their own canoe. Mm-hmm. So I've always been of the mind that I want to have my own job, my own career, because I never want anybody to take anything away from me. I never wanted that carpet pulled out from under me, because I saw it happen to a generation of women before me. You know, my mom, my grandma, you know, it's a scary place to be. So I learned that early on that I could only count on myself.
My thing was, I'm agree. I was like, you got to paddle your own canoe, but I don't want
to
wait around for the paddle. I'm getting out of here.
Paddle.
Let Costner bring the paddle over to the canoe after set's done. Well, now you got to give me his response to that. But Ben's got to bring up the great Deacon Jones talking about going upside someone's head because to blow Tia's mind.
Oh, God.
We'll get into that. Speaking of things that were edited but not edited out.
All right. So in 2009, this clip resurfaced and Chris addressed it. And here's his quote. As a family man, I am extremely embarrassed by an interview I did when I was in my early 20s about dating. My comments were insulting, immature, and foolishly intended as a joke. They do not reflect how I lived my life then or now. I was asked to do something humorous about dating, and it has been a major embarrassment to me since the day I said it. I apologize to anyone who ever had the misfortune to see it now or a quarter century ago.
Well, I do believe that actions speak a lot louder than words. And, you know, someone like Harvey Weinstein was talking about women's rights and then abusing women. He was joking about abusing women, but a family man, you know. So we get
kind of
screwed
up. And he was 20 at the time,
up.
And he's apologizing now because he's horrified at where he was back then.
Yeah, but here's how you know people are joking. They don't do what they're joking about. Like, nobody didn't make me popular, but that whole Billy Bush Trump thing on the bus and stuff, he's like, I may come up to someone, I grab him right in the pussy, you know, and then he goes, they go, you're going to meet what's her name blonde from Entertainment Tonight. He's like, I may not be able to stop myself from kissing her. I may just put one right on her. And then she walks up and they meet and he goes, how do you do? And he like shakes her hand. So that's how you know it's talk, because if it wasn't talk, they'd be doing it. And that's how you know Weinstein was a different kind of talk with a different kind of actions. But Chris Collinsworth, his actions were not his talk.
Right.
And I'd rather...
You want a talker than a walker.
I think we want no talk and good actions. But given the choice between happy talk with Weinstein and then sad rape, I would rather take the sad talk with Collinsworth and the happy family man.
Me too.
I'm kind of a bottom line guy that way.
Mm-hmm.
We have Deacon Jones. I play this ad nauseum on this show, but he has not seen it.
Arms was the reality of the Deacon Jones head slap. The head slap was to do two purposes. One was to give myself an initial head start on the pass rush. In other words, an extra step. Because anytime you go upside a man's head or a woman,
then they have a tendency to blink the eyes.
All right, that's good. Yeah. Freak
I'm
out,
sorry,
dear.
Woman.
He was so close.
What?
He was so close.
Oh, my God. Sorry, that's so crazy. What year was this? 1984.
I know, yeah, when did you see this? This is NFL Films.
It's archival. They never changed it until I started making fun of it.
Yeah, Adam drew attention to it. It went viral on YouTube, and they took it down. Yeah, you can't find it anymore.
Oh my God.
It lived on the NFL network for 37 years before I noticed it and went, this is insane.
That's insane.
It's beautiful.
But that reminds me of Sean Connery, who I worked with. He made some crack about, like, slapping his wife or knocking his wife around, and it was like a huge thing. But I didn't even know, did he actually do it, or was he joking about it? You couldn't tell with him if he was being serious or not, you know?
I think he was talking to Barbara Walters.
Yeah, it was an interview.
Talking about sometimes you have to slap a woman around or something like that.
I know, that clip's definitely still
Sean
around.
Sean Connery that I worked with, and I did not see that side of him.
He was like, you got to get their attention. Now, is that... Hold on,
oh my gosh!
Are we looking at the two of you?
Where did you get that from? Well, did I? Oh, maybe I posted that on my Instagram or something. Did I
you
right?
work? It was on your Facebook.
What'd you work on him with?
I worked on Rising Sun. I played Jingo Asakuma, the computer expert that worked in the basement, and he and Wesley Snipes came in to find out if I could figure out if there was some face replacement on a video of a girl getting strangled.
Mm.
Yes. You played the nerd.
Yeah, I played that's the computer nerd in the movies, yes.
And that was what year?
Oh, was that 94?
And that's
96?
You and Connery, like, in the makeup room or the wardrobe trailer or something like that.
I'm standing up on the thing, the step of the makeup chair.
Ah. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great
shot. That's why he's holding me up by the bum, because I would have fallen over if I hadn't.
Oh, he does have his hands sort of strategically placed.
He's looking out for you.
Very politely placed so as to not allow me to fall over.
1993. I remember that movie, but I can't remember if I watched it or not. What do you think it gets on Rotten Tomatoes?
I don't know.
You ever check your movies?
Nah. I barely watch them. No.
It's fun.
It's
devastating.
That's the thing. It's like, I like the experience of working on it. Do I really want to see myself? It's like I watch it like a scary movie. I go like this. I'm like, oh, God, I don't like that part. Ooh. And I don't believe myself when I'm saying that. You know, so some people just don't watch it at all. I'll go and watch it, but then...
But you don't like watching yourself.
Yeah, because you can always do it better. It's that negative self-talk where you're like, oh, why didn't you do that? Why didn't you do that? You know, hindsight is 20/20, so whatever.
33 with the critics, so probably best you don't look this
one
up.
Was it 33? Oh, boy.
40 with the fans, though.
Oh, wow, there you go.
So a nice...
still less than 50%.
Bump or something like that.
And is it true that you didn't do Baywatch because you wanted to do Wayne's World?
Yes. I had both auditions at the same time, and Baywatch was ahead. And I was waiting because I knew there was nobody that could act and sing for the Wayne's World part. I'm like, just drag our feet. And they wanted to do like a swimming lesson with me, or swimming test with me. And I was like, just, you know, drag your feet until
for
we
Baywatch.
Get the answer. Yeah, for Baywatch.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a real.
That at Sears,
it was a.
Right?
What's that?
They taught you that at Sears, right? The swimming?
Yeah.
It's funny, ironically, from Hawaii, not that good of a swimmer. Little bit of a. That's why I stay on my stand-up paddleboard. It's easier up above the ocean.
Was that first gen Baywatch, or were they going to add you to that?
Well, this was. They wanted to. I forgot who ended up being Hasselhoff's marine biologist girlfriend.
Mm.
It was for that role.
Mm.
So
yeah, it sounds like prime
season
time.
Three
Baywatch. Yeah,
maybe something like that.
Well, because they started in the late 80s or something. You know what I love about that show?
The bathing suits.
Yeah. I'm more like that Hasselhoff's son name was Hobie. And a very famous...
Like a Hobie cat?
A Hobie cat is a famous catamaran kind of sail thing that was really popular that people used
during
to zip
time.
Around the bay with. And I'm like, Is Hasselhoff's character so committed to the sea?
To this ocean life.
Like, it's either...
I think that's what
either,
it is.
I either name you Boogie Board, Ziffy Board, or Hobie. And I came down with... Or Water Wings. And I came down with Hobie. Like, how about you name him Gerald or something that has nothing to do with the,
name,
the
yeah.
sea?
No, people
Captain
from California.
Ahab is up there. Like, and did they, when they named him Hobie... Did they know they were naming him Hobie because of the Hobie cat?
Of course, 100%.
Is there a scene in Baywatch where Hasselhoff's going to the hospital and then he catches a glimpse at a guy in a Hobie cat like going by and like points at it?
I think they got paid some money to name the son Hobie.
Yeah, maybe that's my theory.
Maybe
it was born on a catamaran.
It's like a product
brand
placement.
Integration.
Mm-hmm. The first brand integration on
a character's name.
A character's name. There you go.
Is anyone bothered by the name Hobie, or is that just me?
Just you.
Well, I wouldn't have realized it, but now I'm a little bothered knowing what it is.
Ben, you got to look it up.
But at least I knew what you were talking about.
Thank God.
Cat, immediately. Hobie Cat. I remember.
Everyone else like, huh? What? What are you talking about? Like, Hobie Cat, super popular, weird little catamaran that people would just go around the bay. Probably. I don't know if they're still popular. I don't know if they still exist. I don't know if they transitioned into paddle boards or sea kayaks or something, but the Hobie Cat.
Yeah, I've never seen one.
And also,
I can't picture it.
Hobie is a name, but not a popular name that you would name a kid in 1986 or whatever.
Especially if you own a Hobie Cat. Don't name your kid Hobie.
Yeah. Or, you know... He could have owned a Sea-Doo or a jet ski. I mean, it's pretty limited. Sea-Doo would be a pretty strong name.
Doobie for what he does after he comes out of the ocean.
Oh, sure.
Don't you feel like Hobie would also be the source of a lot of ridicule in the sixth grade?
I'd be embarrassed.
Yeah.
Not after Baywatch. He's the man now.
And also, I know it's not his character's last name, but Hobie Hasselhoff. I mean, I can't even say it without tripping
over. Well, his character name wasn't Hasselhoff, so.
I know.
Hobie was named after the famous, there you go.
Oh, there's a pie.
Who also was the founder of the Hobie Company. There you go.
Hobart was his name.
Oh, so Hobie was a name before, it was someone's name before the cat, and then.
Hobart
was the founder.
Alter. Is that his last name or is that a word?
Alter. Hobart Alter.
Hobart Alter. Definitely. That guy was definitely fleeing Germany in World War II for Brazil and inventing ways to paddle back to the mainland. Hobart Alter. Yeah. Definitely. That was a Nazi war
He's
scientist.
One of the boys
That's
of Brazil.
A red flag right there.
Yes, one of the boys from Brazil. And then he invented the Hobie Cat. And then he's
very
looking.
Very Aryan nation.
Okay.
He then invented that, and then Hasselhoff named a son after his invention.
Yeah, and now looking at it, if my name was Hobart, I'd probably go by Hobie too.
I would too. I wonder if Dobie Gillis. I wonder if his name was Dobart. I have to look into that.
Dobosh.
What was Hobie? What was his story? Hobart, was he born where, came to Venice Beach in 1957, you know, started making custom surfboards. Like,
His father owned a factory in Germany.
Sure.
Yes. And Schindler took it over.
Oh.
But born in Ontario, California. All right.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's nothing to do with Germany.
I know. We just created this whole slur against him.
Yeah.
Sorry, it was a joke.
Yeah, it was a joke. All right. So also people used to like make things in California. You know, they just like came here. They made businesses. They did stuff like
before it got too expensive.
Yeah.
And then they moved it to Mexico or
Texas
or Korea.
Too regulated. All right. What year? All right. Let's take a guess. What year did Hobart die?
Hobart.
He led a healthy life.
And he looked really healthy.
And he looked good.
In that picture.
That's long before sunscreen was invented, though.
98.
Going that deep. What do you think, Chris?
I'm going to go 90.
I'm going to go died in a tragic Hobie Cat accident when a rogue wave swamped him at sea and died in 1983.
2014.
Oh!
I win.
What a life this gentleman had.
See? It was cancer.
Oh, skin cancer.
Jeez, Ben.
Look at us. Aww.
But he must have been 89, right?
2014, I mean, man.
He was around for a while, right, Hobart? Was he in his 80s and his
90s?
Yeah,
how old was he?
2014.
He was
80.
Just 80. Guy got a lot done in the 80s, man.
Good for him.
Well,
we should all hope to be like Kobe.
His legacy will live on in syndication through Hasselhoff's
and
son.
And on this show.
Being named Hobie and this show. All right. Tia's got a song she's going to play us.
Me, 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 me. I better vocalize.
We're going to take a break. We'll bring in Evan, her guitar player, and we'll lay it out for you guys right after this.
In celebration of Jim Carolla's upcoming 92nd birthday, here's a list of 92 things Jim Carolla has never done. Number 27, changed a doorknob. Just one of 92 things Jim Carolla has never done. Let's get back to the Adam Carolla Show.
All right, well, Tia is being joined by her guitar player, Evan, whose name is not written
down. Evan Z.
Last name not written down, so I'll just say Evan. Evan Z. How'd you guys hook up?
Our friend Blake Estrada, who is a huge fan of yours and hopes you come to see us at Vibrato, introduced me to Evan because I said I was going to be doing a gig singing for the California Highway Patrol at Christmas time. So Evan kindly came out and played the guitar in the pouring rain.
Yes. I did a bit for the California Highway Patrol in the pouring rain as well, which is weird.
Well, we were in a barn, so we were covered, but it was like horizontal rain at that point. It was crazy.
T was eliminated fifth in that one.
I'm still here, which is a beautiful song. Tia sent me the video, which can be found YouTube.
On YouTube, yeah.
On YouTube
and
as well.
And the song's on iTunes, Spotify,
what is the song called?
It's called I'm Still Here.
And did you write it?
Yep, I wrote it a long time ago. And during COVID, I was like, this is a song that needs to get out into the world. It's just to celebrate being there for each other and just to be grateful for being alive. That's just the way I felt. And so coming out of COVID, recorded the song. Then I went up to Canada to shoot Easter Sunday. And then, when I was doing the family reunion in Hawaii, decided to shoot a video for it. And then last week decided to just release it, just to put it out. Just as sort of like, I don't know, good positive vibes out in the world, no other reason.
Thanks for not shaming us by calling it Hawaii. And just going Hawaii like normal people.
Hawaii.
I always get shamed when I'm saying Hawaii. And
I wouldn't
else.
Shame you.
God bless you.
You're not born and raised there, for God's sake.
Did you, so this song's not about a relationship or a person per se. It's more of a societal thing.
Yeah, I mean, there are references to individual, to a man, but it's more just being there for each other kind of thing, and just different references too.
Okay, so I'm still here, and you can take it whenever you like.
Baby, I know you haven't had it easy. It's hard to find a reason, a meaning for it all. You were always so strong, till suddenly it hit you like a cold, hard wind on the first day of fall. All the pain you try to hide, I can see it in your eyes. And the words that you won't say, well, I hear them anyway. After all that we've been through, don't you think I know you? This is me. I'm still here. I'm go. You'll always have a place with me. You're not alone. Baby, I'm yours. If you want me to be all I ever wanted, was to have you here with me. So baby, have no fear, I'm still here. So brave, my wounded soldier, stranded in the darkness, standing there alone. My welcoming arms are aching to hold you. My morning star, let me bring you back home. You wonder if I break, how much more of this I can take. But the proof is in my touch, and the strength in both of us. I will never lose my faith, no matter where that road may take us. Always know that you're safe with me.
Exactly the same as the video you sent me. Most people can't do that.
Thank
that was
you.
100% flawless, A+, plus, amazing song, great lyrics.
Thanks just for beautiful. Letting me perform it here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Nice job, too, Evan.
Yes. Thank you, guys. Great plan. Thank you.
Thanks,
yeah,
Evan.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, it just nailed it. I mean, we're talking about performing under pressure. There was not one half a missed note or cracked voice in that entire performance. That was so impressive.
Thank you.
Most people know you can sing at that level.
Well, I get asked it all the time. Was that really you singing in Wayne's World? I'm like, yes, that's part of why they gave me the job. But, I mean, they could have dubbed somebody else's voice in. They told me at the time. They're like, can you sing? Because it's not necessary if you – I'm like, but I can.
Yeah, perfect.
It's my first love is singing.
Would have liked to see you on Baywatch, I got to be honest. Because that's episodic. That's a whole series. We could have enjoyed you week after week.
Yes. If you want me in a bathing suit, just look at my first post from this year, 2023. That's my one and only bikini photo. My gift to you.
You didn't have to. You could have just sung in slow motion on the beach. I would have watched that as an impressionable youth.
The slow motion bounce, it just gets me.
All right, Evan, thank you very much.
Thanks,
wonderful,
hey, pleasure,
wonderful job.
Thank
you can de-guitar there and see your way out of the studio because we got news to do.
Oh,
and Tia's going to adjust her mic and get her seat back down.
Right.
But Chris can fire up the news while
these guys are
sort of getting unwound here.
That was wonderful. That was so good. All right. You know what I love about that song, too, is each chorus gets more intense as the song progresses. It's not just like the same thing every time. So there, it goes somewhere.
Yes. It's wonderful.
Aw, thank you.
Nice job.
Thanks.
All right. Let's go. Let's do some news here. So I'm going to bring up Elon Musk to kick things off. So a couple things. First off, earlier this week and a little bit last week, he was the richest person in the world. He got the title, reclaimed that title.
Oh, he reclaimed it.
Reclaimed it, yeah, because Tesla shares boosted, and it was a big deal. So he reclaimed it. But then a couple days ago, he lost it because Tesla shares tumbled more than 5%. This is how close it is. This is between him and a guy named Arnault. Yeah, he owns LVMH, a luxury goods conglomerate. But
Salma Hayek's father-in-law.
Oh, is that who it is?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Oh, God damn it.
Good for
her. I'm so jealous of anyone who married into checks or squat these days. It's fucking nuts. God damn it.
Yeah. So Arnault, his net worth, according to Bloomberg, $186 billion. And Musk went down to $184. Right, so it's going to be.
My heart bleeds for him.
I know.
Poor guy.
And Musk's wealth has fallen drastically in the back of his Twitter acquisition and stuff going on with Tesla as well. But he in 2021 Forbes had him at $300 billion. So it definitely dropped. Definitely dropped. But so there's a thing going on with Elon Musk today. It's just been reported that U.S. regulators rejected his bid to test brain chips in humans.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, so there's this company that he's working with, a medical device company called Neuralink, and they wanted to start human trials for this revolutionary brain implant to treat intractable conditions such as paralysis and blindness.
Mm-hmm.
Founded in 2016, but they didn't seek permission from the FDA until early last year.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't been approved, and it wasn't reported that they've been rejected until today. So they've definitely tried it on animals, and the animals have been dying.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, there is a reason for it. Major safety concerns include the device's battery, the potential for the implant's tiny wires to migrate to other areas of the brain, and questions over whether and how the device can be removed without damaging brain tissue.
Well, look, my policy on this would be this. Like, I know everyone hates Trump, but Trump had a couple of good policies. And one of his policies was, if you're dying, you can experiment with any drug you want. If you have terminal cancer and there's a drug made to give you a boner or grow hair, and we think it might get rid of or help with your terminal cancer, then by all means, give it a shot. I didn't even know why that was a rule. I like that rule. He tried to get rid of that rule, or he did get rid of it. It's experimental medication. You're fucking dying.
Yeah.
Try whatever you want.
Donate your body to science after you die. Do it while you're alive, and you can see what happens.
So, like, on things like this, I'm like, look, if you have severe paralysis and you're trying to get your movement back or whatever it is, as long as you sign this waiver that says this may not work, then by all means, if you make that decision,
Then give it a shot.
Put that pen in your mouth and sign this waiver.
Okay, so Elon Musk, go to all the hospices in town and see if you can get them to sign off. Then you can do your testing on their brains.
Yeah. But they have to have
synopsizing what you're saying.
Well, but they have to have a paralysis. Like, they have to have something other than a general global decay. They need, like, yeah, it sounds crass, but what I'm saying is, like, I think this is for people don't have the use of their arm or something, and this is going to figure it out with your brain. But anyway.
Yeah, so Elon did a presentation in November, and he says with this device, you'll be able to save and replay memories.
Mm.
Wow, that's like the movies that we've been seeing.
Yeah.
Trying to think of what percentage of memories I'd want to replay. It's in single digits for sure. I don't...
Yeah, what are top three?
I would say being eliminated just before Tia on every major competition show. For selfish reasons, because all I can think of memory wise is like experiences that were pretty good in the millisecond that they were in.
Catching that fly ball.
Robbing,
Brian McKnight.
Of his home run. That, I don't know. Gio may have that or somebody has it. Maybe it's on the internet. But, crossing the finish line at the Toyota Grand Prix in first place or something. Like, those are the basic kind of ones. But I guess what you'd want to do is have, like, memories of conversations I had with my grandfather, who I really enjoyed talking to, who'll no longer be with us. The Toyota Grand Prix, you can find that on YouTube, so it's like I don't need to have that memory. I would have to say conversations with people that you very much enjoyed.
Miss and are no longer here.
Right.
And for a woman, it would be like the moment that I put my baby on my chest, you know, when my daughter was born. That kind of like, because, okay, you're messed up on like the exhaustion of the whole thing. But to have that sweet moment after all the pain has subsided and you have that baby, it's like beyond, you know.
Yeah. That
breastfeeding for the first time.
That's powerful.
That's one of my memories with you. I've usurped your memory. That's made it into my bank.
Oh, my gosh.
I won't tell you where that starts with.
That's a dancing, bank. We'll leave it at Dancing bank. With the Stars memory. Bergeron almost walked in because somebody said, oh, if you want to go and feed your daughter, because I was still nursing when I was doing the show. Mm-hmm. Bergeron almost walked in when I was like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah. That
so that'd be one of Bergeron's memories.
That's his memory that he'd like to keep on the loop.
No, he didn't see anything. I yelled it before the door completely opened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The memory, the one I lost completely is the one where I picked up the big girl Debbie from Mr. Bernal's class and carried her out of...
Hero.
A hero memory that I scrubbed completely.
We invited Adam's old teacher onto the show a couple years ago.
No.
And he told Adam a story that Adam completely forgot, and Adam was the hero in this story. And it just didn't even cross his mind since that moment.
Yeah. Isn't that cool? Like, people remember you for this amazing thing, and it's like not even a blip on your radar.
When he started to tell the story, I started to have these little recovered memories of it as he was saying it. It made sense as he was saying it, but I'd never thought about it.
You carried a girl out of the classroom and she was in trouble?
She's a big girl. She tried to wear heels to kind of doll herself up. Mm-hmm. She had trouble navigating the heels, rolled the ankle, hit the floor, started crying. Class started laughing.
And you carried her out.
Well, after a while. I mean, Bernal told her to get up a few times. She just lay there crying. Yeah. She wouldn't move. The class would kept laughing. It became too much at a certain point. So I just picked her up and carried her to the nurse. Although she was
So you put this whole tough guy thing on. You're all soft.
I just want to get on with the learning. Girl. That's all.
Save the girl who twisted her ankle.
Yeah, I don't know if I think I carried her all the way to the nurse, but I don't know if I at some point told her to handle it herself. I can't recall, but that was Debbie.
Mm. Mm-hmm. If like this chip came out and it was safe, would you even consider it?
Hell no.
But at some point people are going to be chipped versus non-chipped, and it's going to be like boob jobs or creatine. Like, people are going to have a competitive advantage over you when you're playing Trivial Pursuit or you're trying to do some calculation with math and they're doing a whole sort of Terminator type thing going on
in
their head.
Then I'll move to Hawaii and live in the woods or live in the jungle and eat papayas and don't worry about winning at Trivial Pursuit anymore.
Right. Okay, good.
Yeah, you'll never forget the Pledge of Allegiance.
I've won enough stuff already.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
But if I was paralyzed, and sure, I could get the use back of something, I would give it a shot. Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go over to Michael Jordan. He's in the news. Well, Scottie Pippen as well. Because you know how when The Last Dance came out, they kind of got into a feud?
Yeah.
Because Scottie didn't feel like he was portrayed.
Didn't they always kind of not like each other?
Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, they were such a great duo that we always just put them in the same boat. And they've done interviews together. But for the most part... Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely some animosity. Well, I don't know if you knew this, but Scottie Pippen's ex-wife, she's on Real Housewives of Miami. Mm-hmm. Her name's Larsa Pippen. So she was married to Scotty from 1997 to December of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Her boyfriend now, she's dating somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It's Michael Jordan's son.
Mm. Oh, I heard something about this.
Yeah, so Michael Jordan's son, Marcus, he's 32 years old. Yeah, so they met at a party about like 4 years ago. So they didn't know each other their whole lives, but they met at a party 4 years ago. They hit it off, and now Michael Jordan has apparently blessed his son's new relationship with Scottie's ex-wife.
Yeah, but the question is what about Pippen? Is he blessed it? Because that's the guy who we need the blessing from.
Yeah. Well, I don't think if it's your ex-wife, I don't see
how much is the
that.
Age difference. It's a little cougar.
So
48
to 32.
Do you want Michael Jordan for a dad? I know at first glance you do, but how about the concept of never being nearly good at anything as your dad was?
Yeah, it's an impossible situation.
Well, I'm looking at him now. I don't expect him to be good at basketball, so I'm okay, and I think he's okay with it. LeBron's kids, I think they have a ton of pressure.
Named a kid after the paper towels. The one kid.
Bronny.
The other kid is named after the catamaran. All right. So, look, if you're Michael Jordan's son, you're never going to be better than him at basketball, but you got to be really good at something because your dad's the GOAT and you need to be the GOAT of fill in the blank.
You should excel at something.
It's other than banging teammates' ex-wives, which you're definitely the GOAT
of that. I wonder what he does. Yeah, I wonder what he does. I mean, there is a specific psychological makeup of the son of or the child of somebody famous.
I'm going with the universal job title of producer. Producer will cover almost anything.
And get you hot chicks.
And it's not like babysitter. Babysitter puts you square in the middle of a low bracket. You know, producer, you could be nothing or you could be a kajillionaire. And I think people like the range and the title of producer.
Yeah.
We can't really do that with actor because then if we've never seen you on anything, then we do the math on the struggling part. Producer part, we don't know. But I would be curious what his title is.
Let's see what Michael Jordan's son does.
So then the question is are they both pure of heart or does one of them have more motivation than the other?
Well, I think that's pretty clear.
And what's and he owned a sneaker store.
Oh, okay. Entrepreneur. Yeah,
for 3 years.
Oh.
Yeah. Hey, Dad, where's your closet? Why, son? I want to open a sneaker store.
On Fairfax.
It's got a tape and sign on the top of it.
Is that a tough job? I mean, it's. I remember when I saw, not Julian Lennon. What's the other Lennon boy? John Lennon, Julian.
Oh, the sons?
Yeah. What's the
Is
other
Sean?
Sean.
Sean, the youngest one.
Yeah, I ran into Sean. Maybe I've interviewed him. Maybe I saw him. And he was wearing the exact same round spectacles that his dad was so famous for. Very iconic.
And made him look very much like his father, too.
Kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that was a choice because you don't have to pick
out any kind
of glasses.
You go
to the lens crafters. It's not all the round ones. So you're doing it. You're kind of calling attention to it, but you're also saying, I don't want to live in his shadow, but why the glasses then?
You ask some very important questions. I wonder if he needs to ask these of himself.
It's not. I think it's important. Like, I remember having a conversation with Dr. Drew a million years ago. I don't know what you guys think of this, but Dr. Drew was like living in 8,000 square feet in Pasadena, you know? And I said, it's been pretty easy for us to surpass our parents, especially my parents, one bedroom, one bathroom, shit boxes, you know. I mean, but I've passed my dad by the age of 22 or something. Mm-hmm. But I said, Drew, your kids statistically are not passing you. They're not going to live in a 9,000 square foot house. They're going to live in an apartment or a condo in Pasadena or Austin, Texas, something. They're not getting past you. That's. Is that weird? Because our country is basically built on, like, I never went to college, but my son went to college, and now he's a doctor, you know?
But now we're having
to deal with not passing the parent, you know?
Yeah, it's a hard place that kids in Hollywood, it's a very specific malaise, you know, affluenza. How do I top what my parents have done? But they can at least, that's where the parents have to really pay attention when they're raising the kids, say, this is not real. I got lucky here. But, you know, when I was a kid, I had a paper route and I made X amount of dollars and I saved that much. And then I had more the next week. I mean, those foundational things so that they can feel good about whatever little incremental thing that they've achieved in their life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you can't compare. Chances are, I mean, the fact that I'm here, I was super, super lucky. But, you know, the odds are against it. So for it to happen, you know, lightning to happen twice and my child to have the same, you know, benefits that I have, it's, you know, you have to try to shift their mind. It's like, that's not the most important thing. Show business is, you know, smoke and mirrors. But if you're smart, go with this path because you could be a doctor. You could be a, you know, help the world and sort of shift their mind to other things.
I had that exact same conversation with my son two nights ago. I was like, Hobie, listen up. I changed it.
Hobie Hasselhoff.
Did I tell you guys that?
Wow.
Hobie Carolla. Strong name.
That's a good name. That's a good name, actually.
Part catamaran, part car. You know what I mean?
It's like a James Bond car.
We got John Lennon with the pick and the glasses. Yeah, he's looking very John Lennon-y.
Yep. Yep.
But if he went with Roy Orbison's sunglasses, then he wouldn't look like him. So he's definitely trying something.
Yeah, and
Jordan Jr. opening a sneaker store is kind of like, I don't know. Is that a little sad?
Well, maybe it's the most successful sneaker chain in the whole area.
But not a producer. I was wrong on that.
Let's go over to New York.
Mm-hmm.
So the NYPD has, again, lowered its requirements for police recruits, scrapping a timed 1.5-mile run in the police academy. So this controversial move, which training chief Juanita Holmes said, will help more women applicants make the cut.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they're doing it. So it definitely sparked an intra-agency battle between Juanita and the NYPD commissioner that Mayor Eric Adams had to settle. He just said, yeah.
I don't like that guy anymore.
Eric Adams?
Too many bracelets. Every press conference I see, he's got 14 bracelets, like hanging. It's like, hey, dude,
not to tell, huh?
You're a cop. Leave the bracelets at home. I don't need the
bracelets. Like bracelets.
It's a tell. It's a fucking tell. When I see dudes with lots of bracelets,
it's a little too metrosexual for
they're
you.
They're metro. Yeah. I don't like their politics, and I know they're pussies. I cannot stand bracelets on dudes. Look at this. He's covered in bracelets.
Oh, okay, bracelets. I see.
You know why? Because for a dude, okay. Maybe he does a lot of yoga.
He does a lot of yoga. That's what it says to me.
Do it with a clear conscience and an empty wrist. Here's my thing. Bracelets do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They're purely symbolic. Purely, it is. There's no practical application.
No.
It is simply.
I don't know bracelets.
I would like God love you. This is what I would like people to think. Because a bracelet has no, you know, if he's carrying around a fucking Leatherman or Swiss Army knife or something, I go, okay, that guy's got some utility.
There's no functionality.
Bracelets do nothing. So when I see people who wear a lot of bracelets, I'm like, you are heavily invested into something that does nothing, but you want people to think of you a certain way, even though you do nothing. So it's a tell that you do nothing, but you want people to think of you a certain way.
Misdirection. Look at that.
Yeah, it's when I pull up behind some jack off with the bumper sticker, like who saved who, and like a paw print. I'm like, all right, all you do is want me to think about something about you but I'm angry. Because this is just you signaling, but you do nothing. If I see you down at the kennel on the weekends volunteering, then I will think something else. He wears tons of bracelets. He pulls them down below his sleeve all the time. And he's constantly showing to the heavens that I am a man with multiple bracelets. And I'm running New York City.
Maybe his wife made them. She's a big yogi in
kids.
New York.
Please, Dad, wear a bracelet.
It'll go in the drawer of Daddy's desk. Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
So he doesn't take those off either.
It's too many fucking bracelets.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
I don't like it.
Well, anyway, he also agreed that this mile-and-a-half run is off the table.
Well, what's the time of the mile-and-a-half run?
So the timed run, which needed to be completed by men and women, they wanted it to be 14 minutes, 21 seconds.
Oh, that's doable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
fuck
it
that.
Is.
And by the way, this isn't hack squatting 700 pounds. This is running. I mean, I see chicks on the trails up. I see chicks fucking hoofing it up the stairs in Santa Monica and booging along.
14 minutes is not that. That's pretty doable, yeah. Even for me, and I don't even run.
Well, it's doable. Like, you can do a math, and Ben, you got to look this up. But let's just do this. We cannot break it down to every individual. But there's things that women, like, you go, well, you couldn't play football maybe against the men's team, or maybe you couldn't play basketball against the men's team. But running, that's pretty universal. Like, I always mm-hmm. hear women have more endurance. I see women running all the time down PCH. They always look miserable. They have a look like, oh, God, dear God, this fucking sucks. I hate every step, but they have a misery.
But we have strong legs.
On
we
their
can
face,
do
but
it.
But they have endurance. But so here's the deal. The male record for the marathon is 2 hours and 5 minutes, or 4.5 minutes, or somewhere in that vicinity. The female record for the marathon is 2:14, 2:16 and a half. Like, they're 10 minutes off a 26-mile race. They're not 40% slower. Mm-hmm. They're not even 10% slower. They're marginally slower. Ben will look up the world record, but it's not by much, which would suggest that men and women are pretty equal when it comes to running, hence the marathon record.
So they're saying cops don't need to run? Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, well, so what Chief Juanita Holmes is saying is that no cop on patrol, this is her quote, no cop on patrol runs a mile and a half. No one's chasing.
Oh, fuck her. She knows what the fuck she's talking about. Yes, nobody.
No one's chasing.
No cop does 30 push-ups on their fucking beat either, nut job. It's strength, and then it's like fortitude. You know, it's like how much mental strength do you have? It's a meant to run a mile and a half in under 14 minutes. It's not physically off the table for any 23-year-old. It's kind of a mental thing. Like, yeah. Can you push through here
how
a little bit?
How long can you be this uncomfortable?
Yeah, that's not unreasonably. Like, a 7-minute mile is a good pace. But this isn't 2 miles. This is a mile and a half at 7 minutes. That's perfectly
acceptable.
Doable.
Right. Well, so this is amid a record wave of retirements, right? So they loosened the police fitness test in July because of everyone retiring, and now they're having trouble recruiting new cops.
Oh.
Also, yes. So many of whom can find better paying jobs in Long Island or elsewhere in the county. And as I said, they want more women applicants to make the cut.
That always helps. 201. Wow, males are on the brink of crossing the 2 hour threshold. 201.09 for the males, 2:14.04 for the women. So they're 13 minutes off male, but on a 26-mile run. That's pretty much on the pace. I guarantee the 2:14 woman beat 99% of the males in that race.
Mm-hmm.
So they can run. No excuses. And of course, listen, the new world order is we declare war on cops. Cops start quitting and going, fuck this, I'm doing early retirement. Who the fuck would want to be a cop in New York or any real blue state?
Right.
And then they just go somewhere else and get another job. Then there's a gap. We need to hire, but the dumbos aren't good enough to be cops. So instead of coaching them up, we just lower the standards, and then we hire more of them. And then there's more fuck-ups because they're not good enough to be a cop. And then we wonder, what the fuck happened over here? You lowered the standards. Mm-hmm. You hired a bunch. You drove off the people who could pass the test. You hired people who couldn't pass the test, and then we shall see, because this does go on.
Mm.
All right. But this is good. This is progress. Okay.
This is progress.
No. So let me get Juanita's right. No cop has to chase someone for a mile and a half.
Yeah. She's like, no cop runs a mile and a half while on patrol anyway. So why do we have to have them run a mile and a half?
That is scary, supercharged logic. All right. It's great. Okay.
Sorry. All right. Let's see here. Oh, speaking of cops, remember that Tennessee cop who had all those affairs with all of her male colleagues?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You remember her?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she is now claiming she was sexually groomed for those trysts. in a new lawsuit against her former department. Megan Hall, she faced public ridicule over the last few couple months and negative publicity since she was fired, hampering her ability to find a new job. It says that she even tried to kill herself.
Well, a new job as a cop, not at the Bunny Ranch.
Right, I mean, right.
There are jobs out there.
Especially for something like
there are places that are hiring, just not maybe cop.
Yeah, so they're seeking justice for Megan Hall, the suit is, after she was blamed for this scandal and reportedly nearly killed herself. They said she felt trapped in the role assigned to her at the City of Laverne Police Department, and in an attempt to escape, she nearly killed herself, the lawsuit says. Then the city blamed her for everything. The lawsuit seeks justice for her. So she's now fighting.
I bet
that
she could do a mile and a half in under 14 minutes,
I think,
though.
So, too.
She seemed like she had that kind of will.
Chutzpah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone's just going to sue everyone now for everything.
You can, because you can now, right? Yeah.
There was that lawsuit today against L.L. Bean. Some woman was suing for $5 million because her feet got wet in a waterproof boot.
Really?
Yeah, this just came out in the news today. Talk about a ridiculous lawsuit.
Yeah, the guy, I can't think of his last name, but the guy got shot by Kyle Rittenhouse. Remember that story?
Mm-hmm.
He is suing for Kyle Rittenhouse. I don't know why, but there's the footage of the guy's got a pistol and he's pointing it at Rittenhouse, and then Rittenhouse fires the gun and hits him in the bicep.
Right.
So you had a gun, yeah, and you were pointing it at the guy, and he had a gun too, and he squeezed the trigger first. They dismissed all charges, but now you're going to come back and sue him. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a living.
That's just a political thing. That's just a bunch of fucking people that were pissed off at Kyle Rittenhouse. I don't know what happened to self-defense in this country, but we've definitely lost our fucking way. Yeah.
That's the name.
Gage Grosskreutz. Yeah. He was great. He was like on the stand, and the guy was like, when Rittenhouse was pointing the gun and you were holding your hands out, was he fine with that? It's like, yeah. And then what's this picture? That's me pointing the gun at Rittenhouse. Okay. Right hand pointing at his head. Yeah. What else in the picture? My bicep being eviscerated. Okay. Do we need to keep going with this case? You chased the guy with the fucking gun and pointed it at him. Then he had a gun. Yeah. That's the way self-defense works.
Isn't a lot of it the lawyers, though, aren't they? Like, you are a victim.
If they're not allowed to take it on retainer, if you actually had to pay a lawyer to go and chase down these bogus lawsuits, then let's see how many people would actually sue. You know what I mean?
I think I agree. I think the Rittenhouse thing got so politicized that the side
for free
that didn't like him getting off are now pouring money into this and redoing this.
There's a tension.
Yeah. Hope all you die in hell.
Oh, yeah. By the way, that L.L. Bean story. Jeez. That L.L. Bean story. So, yeah, she is suing. It's a class action.
She's trying to get a whole bunch of other people.
Yeah, those
too.
Retailers' boots are not waterproof as advertised.
So, what does that mean? Like, there's water resistant and then there's waterproof.
Yeah, so I'll read you the quote. After purchasing the mislabeled boots, Miss Lindsay experienced water leakage into the interior of those boots after wearing them outside of an inclement weather day in or about April of 2020, when she first learned that the waterproof representations and warranties that included her purchase were false and misleading.
Yeah, but
$5 million.
You have to prove damages. Like, what are the damages? Yeah. Like, I lost a pair of socks. I mean, what else?
Give her some socks.
To mold.
I got toe fungus. Oh, please.
It's a 123-page complaint.
Oh, God. It's so sad what we've become.
Oh, I think that's like I'll go to a restaurant and like I'll see like a chicken bowl and it's a poster. And then in a little font, like, this is not the actual size of this chicken bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why do you have to put that? Who complained about that?
When I was like 11 or 12, I went into the Laurel Canyon May Company Mall. There used to be this mall by my dad's shitty...
The valley side?
Yeah, my dad had a house off of Oxnard and Laurel Canyon that was literally like on a dirt street with a dirt lawn. Like, I mean, it was weird. Like, sharecropper, dust bowl kind of. I didn't know people lived that way, but I
sounds like Valencia in 1984.
Oh God, I was living that way on this street that time had forgotten, with a dirt alley across the whatever. I didn't know you could. It was, you know, fairly modern times in North Hollywood, but this fucking place. But one of my few thrills was to walk over to the May Company Mall. Had an ice skating rink in it. It had, I mean, I couldn't afford the ice skating rink, but it had an ice skating rink. It had a poster shop, which was cool. You could walk through and just go, look at the posters. And best yet, it had a pet shop on the other side. We could go in there.
Is there an Orange Julius?
Probably like that. There was like a candy kiosk at the end. I didn't really have any money, but I would still, it was air conditioned and I could walk through it and go.
Something to do.
Yeah, I'd go to the pet shop that have an iguana and I could just stare at it.
You know
what I mean? Like, I wouldn't get the iguana. Once in a while, there'd be some puppy that I'd fall in love with, but there's no way we're not getting the puppy. Maybe a poster if I like saved up. But at the beginning of that mall, when you walked in, from Oxnard, there was this bad sort of mall Mexican restaurant, and they had a big picture of a hard shell beef taco up on the poster thing, like you're talking, like backlit, you know, and it showed a taco with you know, cheese and lettuce, and it had a big half slice of tomato sitting on it, and then I went in with all the money I had, ordered one taco, and the guy gave me a taco. And it didn't have the slice of tomato on it. Then I was like, the picture has a slice of tomato. And he's like, that's extra. And I'm like, that's not what the poster says. The poster has a, this is, I want a, oh, perfect. I want a Harrier jet from Pepsi. I mean,
yeah,
this is essentially going, your taco picture has a half a beefsteak tomato sitting on top of it. And I don't have any more money. This is it. I don't have another 22 cents
for
the thing.
I
want
that
action.
I want that. And like, that's extra. And I'm like, it's not, because the poster says 89 cents. And that's the picture that you guys chose.
It's an optional garnish. Sorry.
I can't remember how it turned out.
Yeah, I wonder.
I do remember
I'm
that
like,
battle.
I'm like, for God's sake, here, kid, take the whole tomato.
I know.
Just leave me alone.
They're out of business now.
And you're sitting here. So look what happened.
Yeah, there was a Mexican restaurant on the left and I don't know what on the right. It was all just a bunch of places we weren't going to go.
Yeah.
On the right was some restaurant where you sat at a booth and you could watch people skate around, because that was next to the to the rink.
I did a lot of that growing up, just going to malls just to be there. We'd go, there'd be like 10 of us and we'd just go into a Best Buy and just hang out there for
we
a couple hours.
We didn't have Best Buy when I was a kid.
Right. Yeah, that, was that was my mall.
We go to Radio Shack.
We go to Fast Times at Ridgemont High Mall and just hang out.
Was that actually a real mall here?
Yeah, that's Sherman Oaks Galleria.
Oh, the Sherman Oaks Galleria. I did go there before it became like what it is now.
We'd go into the theater where the guy worked at Fast Times. We'd break in the back. You could go around the back and get like the door open and go see the movie for free. The arcade. The hot dog on a stick. I applied for a job at Hot Dog on a Stick.
They turned you down.
Yes, they did.
So you're not hot dog on a stick.
That's like McDonald's turned me down. The one and only job I almost got gainful employment at, they turned me down.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because all I could do was be an actress. I was 15. I think I was 15. And you had to be 16.
Too young, yeah.
Fast food was paying like, at the time, it was like $4.20 an hour.
Oh,
hot dog on a stick was like $7 an hour.
Ooh.
I was like, I'm flying there.
Wow.
But they only employed women. Because the outfit was sexy.
Oh, the buttons and the...
That outfit is sexy?
Weird top hat. It is when they churn the lemonade. When they get both hands on that towel and start working that lemonade.
Right?
Sure. I'm just standing there with a boner and an application. She's working that lemonade churn. That lemonade churn was sexy.
Could you stop doing the motion to me?
It's beautiful.
Now they have machines that do it. That's
you never
it.
Seen them churn lemonade?
No.
At hot dog on a stick?
No. Mm-mm.
All right. Ben, you got to find it, man.
Oh,
you
got to
find churning lemonade at hot dog. And
we'll leave you with this image. Oh, wait.
Hot dog on a stick, they basically dress like Pan Am stewardesses from the
60s. That's not sexy. That's not sexy.
But they wouldn't hire dudes. And I'm like, that's discriminatory, right? And I'm like, I don't know.
That was your second class action
suit. That's all we do is hire chicks.
They probably hire dudes today.
They must today. They gave him good money. You can find that lemonade churn, man. That was hot.
Yeah, Ben, find a sexy hot dog on a stick girl churning lemonade, please.
I remember it was a big, looked like a big butter churn, but it had sugar and water and lemons in it, and they would just sit back there. And
oh, my gosh.
Nah, that's not it. This
is that's a little too jackhammery.
Ben, you can't go, any of the shit we talk about, you can't go from 2003 or
Ben,
something.
Ben, find you gotta, a video of hot dog on a stick girl in 1983. Yes. Churning lemonade with both of her hands.
Oh, my gosh.
How hard is that? Mm.
I can't believe that that you guys find these videos.
They modernized it with some sort of aluminum smash stick or something. This was full churn.
I'm getting
hot. Double-fisted,
lubed,
full churn going on. Citrus infused.
Oh, baby.
Lubed up. Churn rod,
boy,
double-fisted lady churning going on.
Double-fisted lady churning.
And between that and the symbolism of the hot dog, the symbolic dog dipped in batter.
Not very subliminal.
Swinging around that thing.
Oh, my God.
We got one girl in front with two phallic symbols on a stick swinging them around. I got the other one churning hard in the back.
These are sex workers.
I'm confused about myself sexually. I got a lot of ideas going on in my head, and I'm putting in an application.
That poor food court.
That food court, they had
hardcore food court.
They had hot dog on a stick over there.
This really is an old school hot dog on a stick.
Wait, if that's Huell Hauser, my head's
that is Huell
explode.
Hauser.
We have to watch this.
Sorry.
Alternative music in front of an alternative hot dog stand. You ever seen this before?
I have not.
Well, see, this is great. While we're showing our credits, we're going to listen to this music as we watch the hot dog on a stick being dipped. I told you we were going to be visiting a historic place, and this is as historic
as he died, journalism died. That's all I got to say about
Huell. Here in California. This is very California.
It's a part of my life, that's for sure.
It's part of all of our lives.
This girl's just blowing
hot dog on a stick.
Is that a didgeridoo?
Yeah. He's miking it.
Do they go in and churn at some point, man? Dip the dogs. I could have easily done that when I was 19. They still got the aluminum one. They're not using the churn.
They're not using the dildo that you saw?
Yeah.
Wow.
Was a two-fister. It's still sexy. It's still hot.
Oh, okay, just that framing. I could see how that could be misconstrued.
Where's this video, Ben? Pornhub?
Look at these cute little girls.
All right. Put that on your to-do list. We've got to find the churn.
Sure.
Maybe just a photo of the prototype of the hot dog on a stick churn. Early hot dog on a stick lemonade churn. It was too expensive for me. The hot dog and the lemonade, that was just way, way out of range. But I did have a meeting at a building that was in that mall, and I was in that mall parking lot like a week ago, and I was thinking about the time I beat up a guy in that mall who was terrorizing.
Oh, yeah.
There are offices now
everybody.
Over there.
One of your famous fights.
Yeah, one of my famous fights. But I will say this about me, and I'm not saying this just because T is here. When we sit back and you see all these horrible videos of like people are on a subway and the girls are just beating on the other girls, and everyone's just standing around, and then they go, what would you do if something like that was happening? And then we all guess, and we guess in our favor. Like, I'd intervene, you know what I mean? I have several examples of me fighting strangers who were terrorizing other people, and one of them's in that parking lot. Guy, fucking punk rock guy and his buddies terrorizing everyone in the parking lot.
And nobody did anything but you.
No, me and my buddies went and gave that fucking guy a beat down. Threw him on a car hood.
Yeah.
And he had a weapon. We had no allegiance to him or anybody else. We could have easily just walked down our cars and left. But we're like, this guy's fucking with everyone in this parking structure. And now we're going to fuck him up.
I have the same story. Mine was in a 7-Eleven parking lot. And I still feel bad. It was St. Patrick's Day, so we're coming up on the anniversary. But I still feel bad about this because there was just way too many of us on this guy.
And
looking back at it, but he definitely deserved it.
Yes, a little.
He had a golf club.
We need a little more fucking frontier justice out there because every one of these crazy school bus beatings, schoolhouse beatings, subway beatings, there's always some puss just standing there going, oh, shit, yeah, I'm getting out of here. Well, you can call the cops, but they're 15 minutes away. Yeah, this poor nursing student's going to get punched 300 times before the cops show up.
Well, didn't that guy take down somebody at that dance studio? I saw that video of him like wrestling the gun away from the gunman.
Yeah. Good. So, sorry. Yeah. Everyone's deputized. No more hanging out and watching.
Okay.
Street justice.
I need fucking street justice. All right. Let's see. Tia, let's give you a plug for your beautiful song on Still Here. And you can find it on YouTube. And you can go to her website, Tia Carrere. And I'll spell it out so people know. CARRERE.com is where you go.
Yeah, follow her on Instagram and Vibrato Jazz Grill.
Yeah, Vibrato Jazz Grill on April 13th. So come on by. Have dinner and a show.
It's a beautiful place. You may see Seth MacFarlane there.
Yeah, he's played there.
Or Frank Stallone.
Yeah.
There. Might see him there.
It's Herb Alpert, Eden Alpert's
place.
Oh,
that's right.
Jazz aficionados.
Jimmy Kimmel Live coming up March 9th. I'll be doing his stand-up show at his comedy club in Vegas, so you can come out there. Naples, Florida, off the hook, March 24th, 25th. Let's go to amcarolle.com for all the live shows. Until next time, Sam for Tia and Chris saying mahalo.
Get yourself a copy of Adam's latest book, Everything Reminds Me of Something. It's available everywhere. Finer books are sold. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. The Adam Carolla Show is recorded on Rode microphones. And our music is provided by Extreme Music. Get your tickets today for anything with the Ace Man at adamcarolla.com.
All month long on Pluto TV, stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry-directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.